Good afternoon and welcome to Circles of Change, conversations with Dr. Zara Larson on change leadership and career fulfillment. Well, it's Wednesday, June 18th, and I'm Dr. Zara Larson broadcasting live from a very hot Tucson, Arizona, 110 degrees, in fact. Thanks to all the local baseball fans, it turned out for some comic entertainment Monday night before the Sidewinders game against the Colorado Springs Sky Sox. I did successfully get the opening pitch across the plate, and thankfully no one was injured. And Sidewinder Sandy, the big mascot, didn't even have to duck. So thanks to the practice and coaching beforehand, to Jake and Ted, and I think all of those corporate golf outings of getting the worst score despite my cheating had me well prepared to not take myself too seriously. Well, Circles of Change is all about helping others. Every Wednesday from 4 to 5 and Sunday from 1 to 2, that's Pacific Standard Time, my guests and I share our diverse experiences and inspirational stories around personal and organizational change. The Wednesday show segment is specifically dedicated to Tucson and Arizona guests involved in the broader Southwestern Economic Change Agenda. You all may recall that Larry Hecker, chairman of the steering team for Tucson's Blueprint for the Future, and then Chris and Vicky Masalski from Mama Llama's Gourmet Empanadas joined us, and then last week, Gene and Pete Snell from Fleet Feet Sports of Tucson, and they all just solidly launched this Wednesday edition. Now, each of our shows is freestanding, yet there are some common threads and themes evolving on how to shift to what's next, with your eyes wide open, equipped with new perspectives, relationships, and resources to help along the way. So do check out the complimentary written recaps of each show and a podcast at thelarsongroup.com. That's my site, and that's Larson with an E. And please remember to alert those you know outside our broadcasting range that we do web stream live every day, every week at tucsonsjolt.com. So I use the analogy of a change and a circle, not to infer running in circles, although I'm certain we all do a certain amount of that every day, but how we often use circles to change our direction, whether we realize it or not. Think in terms of the highway cloverleaf that are entrance ramps, not just exit ramps, that allow us to turn 90 degrees or more while keeping that traffic behind and in front of us moving safely. Or consider the analogy of a band of gold, which, if designed and manufactured correctly, has neither a beginning nor an ending. It's continuous and has distributed strength. Now compare this to a square where the jeweler, albeit progresses at first in a straight, deliberate line, but he has to stop, deal with some confusion on whether to go to the left or to the right with the material he has in his hand, navigate a sharp turn, and then repeat that process all over again. Every corner thus becomes a potential stress point. I've shared my passionate organizational rant in earlier shows, and it's worth repeating, since we're on this shape thing, I call it, of how quite often so much energy is put into trying to make square pegs fit into round holes, compared to leaders leading and considering how to open up opportunities to capitalize on the strengths and gifts of each of us as individuals, or how we as individuals then sometimes allow others to tell us we're too square or maybe even too round. At the Larson Group Architects of Change, which is the consulting and coaching firm I lead, we are singularly dedicated to helping you celebrate who you are and find the right career match for you to be more, not less, of who you are. And for organizations in change to focus truly on employee fulfillment to get to peak performance and results versus thinking that fulfillment or engagement is merely an outcome of getting results from employees that are slotted into jobs, as opposed to, I would say, really being fulfilled in careers. So with that preamble behind me, let's continue by adding a nonprofit and philanthropic perspective to our series on change by welcoming today's guest, Karen Pomeroy. Karen is founder and president of Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary, based at the Jumpin' Jack Ranch in Green Valley, Arizona. So welcome to Circles of Change, Karen.
Thank you, Dr. Larson.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you here. Yeah, you bet. Well, let me offer a brief introduction before the two of us get rolling together. Karen is a native of upstate New York, and following a successful career in corporate marketing for corporate relocations and payroll services, she opted out, I'll call it, to travel the world for 18 months, a trip that changed her life and led her ultimately to work with wild Mustang horses at a sanctuary in California. Karen then came to Arizona in 2004 and established Equine Voices to rescue and provide a safe sanctuary for unwanted horses from across the U.S. and Canada. These horses were specifically victimized by the Premarin hormone replacement drug industry. In 4 years, her 501c3 nonprofit has rescued over 200 Premarin mares, many of whom were pregnant at the time of rescue. Equine Voices today also hosts clinics and special educational programs, plus does help individuals and organizations place other horses that are in need. I must say that Karen and her colleagues are true catalysts for change, and they give voice to those noble creatures so that they may live without the abuse, pain, and suffering that's occurred in that process. So after a brief commercial break, we're going to look forward to Karen's opening remarks, and we're calling them Passion and Mission, Hearing Voices Calling Across Borders. And we'll look forward to taking your calls locally at 529-3508 or toll-free. The number is 877-544-2580. You can send us also real-time email questions for those of you web streaming to change@thelarsengroup.com. So thanks for joining us, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, and my guest this afternoon is Karen Pomeroy from Equine Voices, which is a rescue sanctuary for special horses here in Arizona. Karen, welcome again.
Thank you, Dr. Larson.
Really a pleasure. Thank you. Please call me Zara.
Okay.
You know, Karen, it's often said that entrepreneurs launch their businesses either out of the realization of an exciting new opportunity or, on the other end of the spectrum, out of complete rage what they've found themselves trapped in the corporate venue, or that they really want to change something. But I get the sense for social entrepreneurs like you that there's a much deeper story. Maybe outrage is somewhere in the picture, but how did your life's journey lead you to rescuing these horses and their babies?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, I started by working for a wild Mustang sanctuary in California, and that's where I learned about the plight of the PMU, Premarin mares and foals, and that's where the outrage came in. I have always been an animal advocate. I've always loved horses specifically, and when I found out what was happening to these horses, it just outraged me. I felt like there's so many people that keep their head in the sand and complain about the things that might be happening, but for whatever reason may not be able to make a difference. I felt that I wasn't going to be one of those people.
You might want to explain what the Premarin industry is all about, because I'm sure there are those listening that aren't as informed.
Okay. Well, the drug Premarin is produced for women that go through menopause to alleviate their menopausal symptoms, hot flashes, night sweats, things like that. What many people don't realize, it comes from pregnant mare's urine, and that's where the PMU comes in, pregnant mare's urine. The horses are kept in confined stalls. They're abused. They're pregnant the whole time that they're collecting the urine. They are withheld water on a regular basis because the pharmaceutical companies want the urine more concentrated, because that's where the estrogen comes from. That's what they're looking for to produce the drug. The drug was produced in the 1940s, so this has been going on for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. Women have been taking this drug, not knowing what the consequences are and the potential side effects might be. In other words, cancer, ovarian cancer, breast cancer, dementia, blood clots, things like
that. And so there have been studies released then that exposed those kind of problems. Then.
Correct. In 2002, there was a study done by the Women's Health Initiative that linked cancer to the drug Premarin. There are over 5,000 lawsuits pending right now against the pharmaceutical companies. And these are just women that are willing to speak up, not knowing what the outcome might be. I have personal friends that have lost their mothers due to ovarian cancer due to the fact that they were on Premarin for so many years.
Wow, my goodness. And so today, though, there's alternatives, or at least we're a lot smarter in the holistic sense to replace those drugs, because there still is that need in the market, obviously, for a lot of women.
There are alternatives. I think the big issue is that there are times where doctors may prescribe the drug and maybe the person isn't asking where the drug is coming from or what is really happening to the horses. What is the big issue? So they are taking the drug because the doctor is prescribing them, and they don't really know what's behind them. There are alternatives. There are synthetic alternatives. There are natural alternatives. We have a compounding pharmacy right here in Tucson that a woman can go to, have their blood tested, and find an alternative to the drug Premarin, which, by the way, the pharmaceutical companies are trying to shut down.
They're trying to shut down the compounding?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
They are. They've targeted, I think, 7 or 10 compounding pharmacies across the United States, and one of them happens to be in Tucson.
Now, if I understand correctly, though, that currently, do I have this correct, that there are no Premarin farms in the United States any longer?
No, there aren't. The last statistic I read, there are 72 left, and they're all in Canada. Now, I rescued my first group of my first four babies from a farm in North Dakota, but they were being phased out at that point.
But I think, if I recall in reading some of your history, that at the time you started, there were some 460 total farms of some
sort. The 1980s was really when the peak, it was the peak for the drug and the peak for the actual farmers. And at that point, there were about 450 farms. Now, that might not sound like a lot of farms, but if a farmer has 1,000 horses on one farm, multiply that, and then we can talk a little bit about the issue when it comes to the foals, but think about how many babies are being born on that one farm. So even now with 72 farms left, it's still, there are a lot of horses that are suffering, you know, greatly.
So the idea of you're reaching across borders, I mean, it's one thing for people to do in-country philanthropic endeavors, but to go across borders, aren't there different issues and challenges you face, you know, with the documentation to like to bring these horses in?
There are, and I don't personally go across the borders to pick up the horses. What I basically, the last couple of years I've worked with another nonprofit group who has been doing Premarin Rescue since the early 90s, and she and I worked together and we rescued quite a few horses. Basically, what she did last year was she went up and actually met with the farmer, took photographs of the horses, put them on her website, and then, you know, I put them on my website as well. And then we contract a hauler that brings down a huge trailer. It's huge, and can fit 35 mares and foals in the trailer and brings them across the border. Now, the challenge is the cost, really, especially now with fuel prices. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the cost will be this year, but typically, I have to pay the transportation costs, the cost for the Coggins and health certificate to bring the horses across the border, and then, of course, the slaughter fees. And the Premarin mares weigh a lot.
Sure.
The horses are big. They're draft crosses, most of them. So if a farmer sells the horse to me or to the slaughterhouse, they really usually don't care where the horse goes as long as they recoup some of their investment. So we end up paying by the pound for that horse.
And then, in other words, to fund this not-for-profit that you have, I assume there are an adoption fee then for the horses?
Correct. How I started it, and it actually seems to be, it's been working so far, I received a grant to begin with to rescue, I don't remember, I think there were about 15 Premarin mares to begin with, maybe more than that, and that grant covered the fees to get them down to me, to my sanctuary. And so what I did was, I figured out what the cost was per horse. And that's what the adoption fee is, and that's what I, you know, carry over. It's not necessarily inexpensive. If somebody were to go to an auction, they can right now buy a horse for $35 or $70. Okay. So I'm a lot more expensive than that. But what I do is with the adoption fees is I take that money, I put it in a separate savings account, and I use that money when it's time and I have room to rescue more horses. So that money gets recycled just for the rescue and adoption section of what I do.
Sure. Now, and so at any one given time, how many horses do you have at the ranch?
I've had up to 50, but that's more than we should have, in all honesty. I'm not a collector. I vowed that I would never be a collector. I can't save them all. So the ones, and this is my philosophy, the ones that come to me, I need to make sure that I have enough money for hay. The manure is handled. I mean, things that people may not think about. I need to make sure that we're covered in all the areas. So right now we have about 36 on the property. 40 is a good number, and I don't like to go over 40. I like to actually keep it under that.
What does your what's the makeup of a typical adoptee, those that are contacting you to take a look and consider?
It's interesting because we feature some of our horses in the Pet of the Week in the Daily Star, and it's interesting the difference between the people that call and the people that actually visit the sanctuary. And what normally happens, either somebody will go on the website and look at a picture and they have to have that horse. It's a heart thing. It's beyond spirituality. I mean, I can't even explain it. And then there are people that come to the sanctuary and actually will see the horse and say, I woke up the next day and I'll get the phone call and she'll say to me, let's say it's a woman say to me, I can't get that horse out of my mind. I have to adopt her. And it goes from there. I mean, I've had volunteers that have moved and purchased horse properties to be able to accommodate the horses they've adopted from me. It's It's really
so
amazing.
There is a special symbiotic relationship that comes for these particular horses. But now, many of these horses will never be ridden. Is that correct? I mean, these are horses that really have a journey in their own to recover from that life they led.
They do. And the thing about horses is that from the minute they put their feet on the ground when they're born, they remember everything. Mm. The beauty of horses, and I think one of the things that I've learned from them and I love about them so much is that they will learn to forgive. Out of all the horses that I've rescued, there's probably two that will never be ridden. And the people that have adopted them knew that. Mm-hmm. And I can't guarantee that the horses will be ridden, but I would say about 95% to 97%, with the right training, with time and patience, with building that relationship and starting over, the horses can be ridden. It's not something I can guarantee, but they're using a lot of these Premarin mares and you know, the boys as well as they grow up back east for jumping dressage. They're using them in show rings.
So they are.
Yeah. They're amazing.
Amazing horses, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if anything, you never know. In the case of horses, just like humans, some of those difficult times really strengthen us, you know, for other venues.
Right.
Now, talk to us about the volunteers that are involved in your organization. How have they come to you?
Different ways, word of mouth a lot of the time, through the website, through the Volunteer Center of Tucson. You know, we've had some press, so through the press, and I could not do this project without the volunteers. They've really helped us grow. At the beginning, I did everything by myself, feeding, everything, mm-hmm. And now I have a ranch hand. He's not a volunteer. He is a paid member, but he's about the only one that gets paid, and everybody else comes, and they're so dedicated, and I have people that drive all the way from Oro Valley down to Green Valley every week to shovel manure.
Several manure.
So they love it, and it's their escape, and it's their meditation, and it's their way to get away from maybe their day-to-day lives as well and doing something good for the animals.
Sure.
So,
is there any one particular horse that carries a special spot in your heart, either one that's still with you now or is no longer with you?
They all have a story to tell. That's a hard one, but my horse Spirit is an Arab that I rescued 7 years ago when I was at the Mustang Sanctuary.
Oh, okay.
And he was going to slaughter. He was 3 at the time. And he really is the one that got me back into horses, so I have to thank him for that. He's an amazing guy. He's just incredible. And then, of course, there's Gulliver, who's our mascot. He was
one of the first ones you adopted.
He was one of the first PMU babies that I rescued. I rescued 4 from that lot, and it was because of them that I actually decided to move forward with a nonprofit. It was because of him. And he was going to slaughter. They thought he was big and ugly, and he became our mascot. So he's a lap horse. He's amazing.
A lap horse.
He would sit on your lap.
Sit on your lap.
He's about 2,000 pounds.
I say that of my golden retriever. I didn't know people said that about horses as well.
Incredible.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, this idea that there's this recuperation process for some of these horses. How long are they with you before they get adopted?
It just depends. I mean, it is definitely a challenge because there are some that just, I mean, I've had a couple that are still there a year and a half, and they look and they walk away. They don't really want much to do with people. But there are some that turn around very quickly. It just depends.
It
really depends on them.
Very good. Well, we're talking here at Circles of Change with Karen Pomeroy from Equine Voices, and this is Dr. Zara Larson. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we do, the call-in lines will be open at 529-3508 locally or toll-free 877-544-2580 or send us an email at change@thelarsongroup.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Circles of Change. This is Dr. Zara Larson, and I've got Karen Pomeroy with me from Equine Voices. Our call-in line is 529-3508 or toll-free 877-544-2580. And Karen, we've been talking about, of course, your rescue and sanctuary. I was wondering if you might help us understand the differences related to slaughter versus euthanasia. I mean, the whole idea of awareness for people and even their own choices if they've got a horse, you know, that needs to cross over to the big nap, I'll call it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way of putting it, actually. It's a huge issue right now. Let me back up a little bit. We used to have three slaughter plants that were operating as of last year. They shut down in the United States.
In the United States.
So right now we're not slaughtering horses in the U.S. What's happening is they are being shipped across the borders to Canada and to Mexico. And if anybody ever witnessed a horse being slaughtered in Mexico, some people think it's okay, but it's the most brutal death a horse could ever endure. So humane euthanasia is basically if you were to euthanize your cat or dog, mm-hmm. it's a needle in the vein. It's typically a very peaceful way to go. I've euthanized several horses at the sanctuary for various reasons. Last choice, of course, last option, but and they've always been under loving kindness. I've always been there with them. What typically happens in the slaughter industry is, and it's not only horses that are old or lame, but a lot of them are, or they've been abused. They cram them in double-decker trailers usually, and they use cattle prods, and they'll travel for hours without food or water. And a lot of times they end up breaking legs while they're in the trailer. Yeah. It's horrible. The transportation is probably as bad as the actual slaughter itself. In Mexico, there aren't really any regulations that make it humane in any way, shape, or form. And typically what they'll do is stab them to death and cut a main muscle or a main artery or whatever. Then they are rendered while they're still alive a good percentage of the time. So from the minute they walk on the trailer to the minute that they actually die, it's horrific.
So part of the services that you're providing also here in Equine Voices is education in general.
Correct.
And so providing to educate the public for those of you that that are, for whatever reason, that horse needs to go to a different place, that the euthanasia is a very important option.
It's a very important option, and most people think it's so expensive to euthanize a horse. And the reality is, if you were to euthanize a horse, I mean, in my opinion, it's not, I mean, it's like a regular vet bill. You have the vet call, mm-hmm. You have the euthanasia fee, and then depending on where you have your horse, I think this is where the expense comes in. If you don't have a place to bury the horse on your own property, then you do have to, you know, call in and have them moved.
Well, you know, with the economy that the state is in, I recall this week, in fact, we were talking about the break, the really disturbing article here, what's happening in Tucson in some sectors, the pressure being put within neighborhoods of some of the places that people are boarding their horses and mm-hmm. then, you know, wanting to turn them out of places that were otherwise there with the urban sprawl that we have. You know, how might your organization be trying to help and educate people at this point?
Well, that's a tough one because there are so many issues right now. There's so many things happening in the livestock but horse world. There's that. There are horses that are losing their homes because people are moving into an area where there may be a boarding facility and then the boarding facility is being told that they can't operate or whatever the reason is. Because there's so much pressure put upon them that if the boarding facility has 75 horses, what do the horse owners do with these horses? I mean, we're living in a city. Tucson is a big city, and the boarding facilities are far and few between now as it is. So that's a huge issue. I think people are faced with making some really, really difficult decisions. And if you have a horse and the horse is 5 years old and healthy, you can't think about putting it down and euthanizing it, you know. So that's an issue. The economy, even though I'm always a firm believer of the glass being half full and I'm trying not to go in that negative spot, is really impacting a lot of people that have horses. Horses are expensive to feed. I just paid $15 a bale, and I go through 10 bales a day for hay. And, you know, so that's another issue. People are saying, calling up and saying, I can't afford to keep my horses anymore. Can you take them? They're older, they're lame. And, I mean, I only have 10 acres. There's only so much I can do. And for every horse that I can't adopt out, I can't save another life. And so it's a big issue. As far as the euthanasia part of it, I've started a euthanasia program, but it is designed for people that cannot afford to euthanize their horse. And I'm helping raise money to subsidize those vet fees. And that's what that program is about. It doesn't mean I'm going to pay the whole bill. It doesn't mean if you can afford it that I'm going to, because I'm a nonprofit and there's only so much to go around. But that's what it's designed for. So people will think about making the educational part, think about making a different choice for their horse, rather than saying, well, I can send it to an auction and maybe get $70 for it, but not knowing what the outcome is going to be for their animal.
let's take a totally different tack and now shift to a positive side of some of the programs that you've offer. I know I hear the word natural horsemanship as it relates to the education and the learning that you are doing to help these horses out as well as potential owners. Could you talk about some of the programs that are offered at your ranch in that area?
Sure. Natural horsemanship basically is a new way of working with horses, and it's there's a broad definition, but it's a new way that I think people are adapting. There are different styles and techniques because there are different instructors out there that teach different techniques, but it's basically building a relationship with a horse, learning their body language, and training them in their language rather than forcing them to do something that they may not want to do. In other words, the old style, the old cowboy way of beating them over the head with a 2x4 or shackling their feet or whatever the case may be, beating them to submission, is really on its way out. Horses are very smart. They will most of the time do anything for you if you can build that right relationship. It just takes a little bit of time and certain techniques, and every horse is different. So some of the programs that we offer, we have a trainer that comes out and does our safety classes, which is part of our volunteer program, and she uses the natural horsemanship techniques. And then once a year we have Anna Twinney, who has worked under Monty Roberts for years, and she's world known now. She travels all over the world, and we're lucky to have her about once a year, mm-hmm. and she comes down and offers a clinic and does body language, and she's incredible. So that's the natural.
And you can see a distinct difference in how the horses respond to her.
Amazing.
Vis-a-vis the others.
That's amazing. Because that's a lifelong journey that you're embarking with your horse. It's starting a foundation with them. Like with these PMUs, we have to start over with mm-hmm. them. And beating them over the head, which is what they've known, isn't going to work. And I've just seen magic happen with these other techniques. Just the confidence level in the horse and just the things that they're willing to do when they start trusting you. It's amazing.
And when she comes to town, these sessions that you have, are they open to the general public
to
come and enjoy?
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we always have everything listed on our website.
That's great. And why don't you share what your website is, Karen?
The website is www.equinevoices.org.
Because it's mm-hmm. a not-for-profit.
Right.
Now, I noticed when I was out on your site, you've had a lot of programs that are working with young people, mm-hmm. Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, some other areas. I imagine that's quite an eye-opener for youth around the area.
It's really interesting. We had, last month, we had the Southern Arizona Humane Society youth group come down, and because they mostly deal with dogs and cats, they've partnered up with us with the equine program, and that was it was really amazing. They had so much fun and learned a lot, I hope. And then just yesterday, we had the Volunteer Center of Southern Arizona, their summer youth group, come down, and we split it up into two groups. We had 12 youngsters come yesterday, and then we're having 12 more tomorrow. And they worked really hard. they were tired when they left, but they learned a lot as well about horses and their behavior because we did a little safety class before they actually went to work.
Well, I think it's something to recall. It's one thing to adopt a dog or a cat, but to make the decision to take a horse, I mean, part of it, not just because they're big, but their longevity, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the average age for a horse would be...
Well, I would say 25 to 35. Years. Sometimes they can live to be, you know, older than that, sometimes younger. It just depends on how well they're cared for, what kind of food they eat, regular vet checks, things like that.
And then as far as your volunteer organization, do you get support from some of the large animal veterinarians around the area, or how are those bills handled, again, from donations?
From donations, mostly fundraisers, grant writing, that sort of thing. I do have a vet that has expressed interest in helping with our euthanasia program, and she's not a horse vet, but she has just gone through some classes, and hopefully she'll be helping in that arena mm-hmm. to cut some of those costs.
Terrific, very good. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with Karen Pomeroy from Equine Voices. Again, our call-in number, 529-3508, toll-free 877-544-2580. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Circles of Change with Zara Larson and my guest Karen Pomeroy. Reminder, our call-in line is 529-3508. Karen, you started to tell me during the break about a special pilot program you're starting here shortly with a veterans organization. Share with us that.
Oh, it's really exciting. We are working with the VA hospital here in Tucson, and we are starting a pilot program. I believe it'll be starting July 8th. of this year, and we'll be working with veterans that are traumatized by the war, that are coming back from the war, that may have head injuries, or I'm not sure, they're actually picking the people that might be appropriate for the program, and bringing them to the ranch and doing some therapy with them, and working with the horses that we have that have been traumatized as well. So we're very excited about this program.
Because, you know, you often hear about people who get involved in rescue of any animals, and it's as much about what the individual can bring and wants to get through as much as it does the animal.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that happens with the volunteers, too. It's interesting. And so it's a win-win situation for both the horse, the equine, and the human.
And the human. That's great. Well, give us the hit now. How can we help you for all that's going on at your organization? You've been in business now, out there for 4 years, and in a tough economic time, but yet you're still capturing the hearts of so many people. What are the different venues that people could contribute to supporting your mission?
Well, one of the things that people can do is donate. That's a biggie. We have a sponsorship program, and for $50 a month, somebody can sponsor a horse, pick out a horse off of the website, or come down and actually meet the horses that are residing at the sanctuary.
Which I think is a great concept, particularly for those who may not be able to take them home, but at least you come. You can come and see them.
And that's it. And
you won't have to clean up after them.
Exactly. Yeah. Or you can if you would like to volunteer. And that money goes straight to the hay. Our hay bill is astronomical right now. Our hay bill is over $4,000 a month just for hay alone. So that's where that money goes. Volunteer, adopt a horse if you do have room or the desire to have a horse in your life. We have a fundraiser coming up in September down in Amato. It'll be a wine tasting, and everything will be posted on the website once we have the details finalized.
And you've had, it looks like, four very successful and growing fundraisers, one each year. Is that correct?
We have up in Tucson, and it's usually in the spring. And it's an incredible program because Gulliver's there, and we have horses that have gone through our adoption process that are different levels of training and silent auction, live auction. So people can stay tuned to that for next year and come and support the cause.
Yep, that's great. So. Then I think also you've got a gift shop that's fully equipped with all those things that hook people that love animals.
Wonderful t-shirts and sweatshirts. Not that we want a sweatshirt today, wonderful gifts. And then one thing I'd like to mention is for the veterans program, and also we've had people that have come to the ranch that have been handicapped, that may be in a wheelchair. We are looking for a golf cart. Really important, because it's all sand, and it's very difficult for the people to wheel their wheelchair, and a golf cart would really help be able to show them the babies, for instance, that are on the other side of the property. So if anybody's out there that has an extra golf cart that would like to donate, we'd be able to give a tax write-off for it.
That's right. So. Well, I'll see how I can give some additional traction to that on other shows. Okay. I think that would be a great item to donate to the organization. So tell me, you know, you've been through this journey now yourself. What might advice you might offer to individuals who may indeed have that calling, like you did, to shift from the corporate environment or for-profit to not-for-profit? What's your words of advice?
Boy, that's a big question, because there's so many things to think about. But I think the big thing is do your homework and make sure that this is what you want to do. I mean, I hung on a limb there for a while, and but it was a calling that I couldn't ignore, and it was just pure from the heart. I think all the background that I've had in the past has led me to this place, and from the corporate world to working at the Mustang Sanctuary, it just fell together. I knew this is what I wanted to do. Depending on what kind of nonprofit work the person's involved in, if it comes to animals, be clear about your mission. I mean, there's so many things to think about before you actually jump in with both feet. But I believe that if you, I believe in the glasses being half full. And if you are going with your heart and you have the desire to make it happen, I think the sky's the limit. And that's pretty much been my philosophy, and it's so far worked.
But the fact of the matter, you've also made yourself very open to learning things along the way. Like, you had never written a grant before, I can imagine, or even that journey to become a 501(c). That's not a trivial process.
No, it's not. And it's definitely a 24/7 job. And actually, I probably, like all of us, could use more hours in the day. But normally when you start out, especially if you're dealing with animals that need to be fed or sick or injured, you're up in the middle of the night, you're trying to put your website together. I mean, you can't afford to hire somebody, and that takes time. So those are things to consider before actually, I think, going forward with it.
So what's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself then during this 4-year journey?
To trust.
To trust. That's beautiful.
trust.
To trust. Trust yeah. in the mission, trust in the calling.
And trust in myself.
Trust in yourself.
That I can do this. So yeah. that's the big one.
That's great. Well, we're really delighted that you had the chance to join us today, Karen.
Thank
we
you.
Wish you well. And
thank you.
For those of you folks listening out there, let's find that golf cart or pass the word on. And also consider sponsoring a horse. That'd be a wonderful way to support the endeavors of Equine Voices.
Thank you.
Great.
Thanks,
very good.
Sarah.
Have
Thanks
a great afternoon.
Me.
You bet. Okay. Well, while our show continues to open up conversations for positive personal and organizational change, just as you heard in Karen's own personal journey as well as her organization, you know, it's up to you to take the first step to act upon what you've heard. Choose to build up the strength and a peace of mind amidst maybe taking some risk and having some faith or trust, as she said, to let go of what may have served you well up until now, yet could be pulling you back or not allowing you to sail forward, or distracting you from getting even more in an upcoming chapter of your career or life, in particular to make a lasting difference for others in a more joyful and fulfilling way. So please visit thelarsengroup.com. Again, that's Larson with an E, and pass on the good word about Circles of Change to help those of you who are already in transition or to help someone confidently step forward to what's next. You'll find the podcast of our particular show today up by Wednesday, probably about Saturday. And the library is indeed expanding. It's very diverse. There's thought-provoking recaps, podcasts, and some other change-enabling resources. If you're ready to go beyond self-study, the Larson Group, again, the firm I lead, we offer first-time one-hour complimentary coaching sessions that are face-to-face or on the telephone, and I'd certainly love to be of service to you and those that you recommend. We do have clients across the United States, different industry sectors, disciplines, organizational roles, and indeed various stages of life. So send me an email at change@thelarsengroup.com, outlining your challenge, or feel free to give me a toll-free call, 877-544-2580. You'll also find out on our website a description of the innovative assessment process that we use. It's available. It's called SEMA, the System for Identifying Motivated Abilities. In other words, it helps us understand how we're wired in the process of trying to then find out what's next. Also, I'd like you to watch for the next edition of Natural Awakenings magazine that's here in Tucson and Phoenix, because on July 1st, I'm partnering with the publishers to bring forward a new column called Career Briefs. For those of you finding our shows of value, a great way to thank our sponsors who make this show possible is to offer them your business. So my ongoing thanks to Jan and Candy of Long Realty, Rain Chaser Landscaping, Dennis Jim Paroli, Allied Financial Services, and Fleet Feet of Sports of Tucson. And of course, a special acknowledgement of the creativity and commitment of the team here at The Jolt, and in particular, our board operator, Joel Caton today, and podcast producer, Paul Pearson. So a little bit on the upcoming calendar. Please tune in this Sunday, June 22nd, as we continue the nonprofit focus for this month with Dr. Brooke Manville. Brooke is Executive Vice President for the United Way of America, based in Washington, D.C. As many of you might realize, this is America's largest nonprofit, raising over $4 billion annually to service 1,400 local affiliates in cities and towns across the U.S. Brooke's career spans for-profit consulting, academia, book publication, freelance journalism, and even the television media. So like Karen Pomeroy today, he's going to discuss the power of mission in leading change regardless of the organizational sector. Next Wednesday, Sandy Mumy, the director of the Arthritis Foundation, based here in Tucson, is going to join me. Many of you may not realize that actually that is the founding chapter of the organization that does research, advocacy, and support for over 46 million people of all ages affected by this disabling condition. Sandy's going to talk about their mission to help others take control of their lives, as well as share her career journey, which actually shifted across two different nonprofit sectors, something that Laura Gassner-Otting from the Nonprofessionals Advisory Group spoke about last Sunday. In fact, it's quite interesting how much Karen's advice today was right on top in sync with what Laura shared with us on Sunday. We often talk about cultivating a personal board of directors to guide us in our careers and lives, and a little bit pun intended, I'm happy to announce a new voice on my board. It's Oogway the Mystic Turtle from the new animated film Kung Fu Panda, and he advised a befuddled warrior wannabe with the following saying that I'd like you to give consideration to. He says, "The past is history, the future is mystery, and today is a gift. That's why it's called the present." You know, life is too short to stay stuck in the wrong place or to remain inattentive to your health and well-being, which often includes where your career energy is going, not just for your sake, but for the sake of all those who are counting on you. Consider today a call to action, a gift to be present, in particular for your spouse or partner, your children, extended family, friends, and all those folks at work, your colleagues, and others in need of your guidance and role modeling to take some risks and embrace change. I send out a special message today to my new client, Renee, and her friend, Joan, who I believe are listening in, who are right now as we speak, Karen, ministering to four sick horses this afternoon, plus thinking about what's next for them. This show has been for you, and I'm sure that Karen's words of commitment were inspiring to the two of you in particular. So finally, here's that hot weather checklist for you Arizonans, particularly with 110 out there today. Please make sure to get out those light-colored clothes, keep your sunglasses, hat, sunscreen, lip balm, car windshield and water close at hand for the summer sunshine attempts that continue to be so high. Watch out carefully for your children, the elderly, and as I'm sure Dr. Randy Aronson's going to say in the next show, he's our radio pet vet, he's going to talk about doing that special focus for our pets at this time of year, so please stay tuned. We're going to look forward to your joining us again this Sunday from 1 to 2 on The Jolt. This has been Circles of Change, conversations on change, leadership, and career fulfillment. Have a great balance of the weekend. Remember, while recognizing your limitations is wisdom, partnering to circumvent them is called unleashing your potential. This has been Dr. Zara Larson. Have a great week.